Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, I feel awesome. And do you know why?
Because you're a Lego?
Nope. Because it's only 117 days until Fall Comic-Con, the one-day wonder.
Get it out of the way early!
1,000 square feet of awe-inspiring comic book wonderment. Plus, they'll have stuff for the Nick Post Scholarship Silent Auction. And you know, I'm a sucker for a silent auction. There'll be free grab bags, free parking, free door prizes if you win. October 8th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the State Fair Education Building. And, of course, advance tickets will go on sale July 1st at www.mcbacomiccons.com. And you know what else, Corey?
We're going to be live streaming.
And by the time this here podcast drops, it'll be 110 days away. Woohoo! Hooray for countdowns!
Wow. Do you have a big clock on your wall counting down the days?
One, two, three. I'm sorry, what? I'm watching the seconds fly by.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah, there's one. There's another.
So that's how you're feeling today.
That's how I'm feeling.
255 shows, and he still doesn't know what the format is.
Format, my.
How you doing today, Jen? We have the lovely and talented Jen Wicked with us on the show.
Hello, hello. I am still standing somehow, or sitting, as the case may be. I'm running on, like, 3 hours of sleep last night, or this morning, I should say. 4 hours of sleep the night before. I can't really remember anything before that now. Yeah. I'm doing good.
You're running on no sleep and Nathan's hot dogs.
Not Nathan's hot dogs. I don't think they have those at the gas station. So today, like, I went to my usual gas station and they didn't have any hot dogs. So I got this really good, it was like wrapped up, so I had to microwave it when I got home. But it was like a pretzel roll with like bacon and sausage and egg on there and cheese. It was really good. You know, so I'm expanding my gas station horizons a little bit. I'm eating things other than hot dogs. Though it wasn't by choice, but, you know, I'm not a picky eater, so I made do.
Not a picky eater.
No, you know, life keeps trying to kick me in the balls. I really, like, I've got some medical issues right now.
You got balls?
I've been running on both ends, uh-huh.
Ooh,
and
that is a medical issue.
You know, like, somebody stole some of my financial information, so I had to deal with that today. And
again?
You know what? Like, again, you know, and, like, just the shit just keeps going wrong. And at this point, it's just like, man, everything I've been through has just been so much worse. Like, all the little petty shit now, it's just like, whatever, man, just throw it at me. I fucking deal with it. So, you know, it's like lots of shit has been going wrong over the last week. You know, because we've been out, but I had some anxiety problems coming up again. But, you know, it's just whatever, man, I can deal with it. I'm just tired of your shit. I'm not taking it anymore.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool that you're fighting.
It is, you know, and I mean, I actually, like, I've been waking up, like, feeling pretty happy and everything else, so, you know, it is what it is. I'm just going to deal.
I don't remember waking up.
you don't remember waking up because you never sleep.
Well, it's like, I'm at work, and it's like, how the hell did I get here?
Ooh.
Well, obviously nobody died on my drive-in, so okay, I guess I'm still at it.
Yep, here I am.
And you had a week off?
Who did?
You did.
I didn't have a week off.
Yes, you did. You did not show up last week.
Oh, yeah, I had appointment. I had something I had to do, so.
A sin that he does not forgive.
I know. He told me all we're going to go hardcore geeking while I wasn't there, so.
And we did.
Well, I'm glad for you.
And we're going to do some geeking this time, but it's a geeking in a different direction.
Okay, so if we can geek in a way I can participate in, that would be great.
We are going to actually talk about one of my favorite columns on the interwebs. Is over at Comic Book Resources, which has some good stuff and a lot of pablum. And if we want, I can discuss that too. But there's a column called Tilting at Windmills by Brian Hibbs, who owns a comic shop in San Francisco, not the one that's owned by the guy who challenges me for best dressed man in comics. And I'm sorry, James Syme. I'm sorry. Your zoot suits are last year. But Brian Hibbs has been running comic shops for about, what, 30 years now, Joe?
He's old.
And he has formed at least two different comic book retailer associations, one of which Joe has talked about in the past, that successfully took on Marvel. And the column he has this week is called The Power and Responsibility of Creator-Owned Comics. And he talks about what it's like being a comic shop owner who supports creators' rights, dealing with creator-owned comics, and their scheduling issues. So, first off, head on over to Comic Book Resources. Put this here podcast on pause. And go over and read the column, and then come back. We'll wait for you.
We will?
Yeah, Joe. They didn't read the column ahead of time. What a bunch of goofballs.
Yep.
They didn't do their homework.
Come on over, people. They're hepped up on goofballs.
Or sleep deprivation.
Not the listeners. Our listeners are well rested because they have us to put them to sleep.
Zing!
Don't forget to tip your weight, people. They're working hard for you. Try the veal.
Tip them over.
Are they back? Are they all back?
Are they back? I don't know. You tell me.
There's a few still staggering in.
There's some.
Matthew, guy, put down those bean worlds I sent you. You'll have plenty of time to read them later.
All right. So, I'm going to read one of the paragraphs here. The majority of the dollars in this business are generated through serialization. Even if we look at the book scan numbers, you can see that the largest percentage of sales are generated from books that were serialized first. Probably at least 100 million of the 140 million of 2016 sales were serialized before collection. Serialization is a major economic engine that drives the publication of comics in America, and therefore production deadlines become the lash that propels that engine. And I want to talk a little about history in that back years ago, serialization was how pretty much all media was consumed. Charles Dickens' books were actually serialized in newspapers. A lot of the Tarzan novels were serialized in magazines. Radio drama invented the soap opera, invented that sort of thing. But comics seem to be the one thing that still puts out a monthly and then collects it into a book. Whereas, you know, it's pretty rare that a novel will be serialized and then collected into a book. The last time I remember it happening was when Stephen King did it with The Green Mile. And, Joe, even when you were becoming, you know, there for a while, you were probably the biggest graphic novel seller in the Twin Cities. The majority of your sales were the monthly comics.
You are correct, sir.
And were the people who bought the graphic novels different from the people who bought the monthly books?
They were freaks. No, actually, the big thing that was going on then was a grand debate about buying the issue as it came out versus waiting for the graphic novel. Because the problem was, is if you were a person that was living on your comic work, you only got paid as the issues come out. But you wouldn't get any monies from these people until the book came out. And back then, as you alluded to, it was more skewed to the monthly periodical type books that came out. Now it's kind of the other way around. I think people do the comic, realizing the bread and butter is more in the graphic novel because that has a perpetual type inventory. It can always be there and be on the shelf. And if it sells, people will keep reordering it and reordering it over and over.
And the other thing about that is that a lot of the comic publishers are looking for what are known as evergreens, and that are books that sell over time. Books that, you know, every year they sell a certain number. Image is probably doing about 100 times better than they would if not for the fact that they have these evergreen books of Walking Dead, Saga, Chew, the Jonathan Hickman stuff, The Wicked and Divine. Whereas the monthly books do great, but as Robert Kirkman has said, he became a millionaire because of the fact that he sold 500,000 copies of the first Walking Dead trade paperback so far. Whereas the comic, when the first issue came out, he was very lucky to sell 12,000 issues of number one. And what the article goes on to talk about is, last month we talked a little about licensed comics, and it seems that we talk endlessly about mainstream comics, corporate-owned superheroes. Let's talk a little about the complete reverse, creator-owned comics. And he talks about the big problem with creator-owned comics, and it's been this way for a long time, is for the retailer who sells month in, month out, and lives by Wednesday. They live and die by how Wednesday goes. Creator-owned books are often late.
Woo-hoo!
They don't come out when they are supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
They will have huge gaps. If you go and look at the Image sales numbers, the stuff that comes out every month does really well. The stuff that comes out when it's planned, like Saga, any of the Brian K. Vaughan stuff. You know, he does like six issues, then takes a break, six issues, takes a break. It maintains, but if you've got a creator who, okay, issue one comes out the first month, issue two comes out the second month, issue three comes out maybe 2 months later, issue four comes out 3 months later, issue five comes out the next month, issue six comes out that same month, issue seven comes out 5 months later, the sales don't just drop, they plummet. And Joe is a retailer. First off, why do you think that is? And second, how did that affect your ordering?
Well, see, it was weird because what I had done in my shop is, you know, first of all, I had a couple boxes where I would put creator-owned books, independent books, whatever, and leave them at cover price. And I always tried to keep 2 to 5 in stock, depending on what the book is. There were probably quite a few that didn't sell, but rather than keep them on the shelf, I would just keep them cover price there. You know, why board and bag them and, you know, spend that extra thing? It's kind of an interesting thing because at the time, I remember Todd McFarlane was talking a lot about the fact that X-Men comes out and that Spawn comes out. That's what enables a comic shop to buy smaller press independent books, because you can count on the fact that next month there's going to be an X-Men book, and next month there's going to be a Spawn book, or even Superman, because, you know, when the death of Superman was big, that actually was the best-selling comic by far. And he was right to an extent, because if I'm going to actually take stock and put your book there, yet I have no idea when your next one's coming out or if it'll ever come out. You know, I'm not necessarily making a lot of money on your book. If anything, I'm taking a valuable floor space to keep it there. Hence the idea I came up. I must have had, 5, 6 long boxes full of independent black and whites. I remember when we had Colleen Doran as one of the rare creators in the shop doing a signing. And during a slow period, she was flipping through some of the books. And she ran across one. I don't recall the name of the book. I want to say it was Desert Peach by...
By Barr.
Yeah, I don't think that might have been it. Because all I remember is she looked at it and she had said something like, "How does this sell?" And I'm like, well, you know, it does and it doesn't. I mean, I just have it there because I don't want to leave it on the shelf. Yet, you know, it's nice to have it, so if someone's going to buy it. She's like, "Will you ever reorder?" And I said, "Well, if it sells out, probably not." And, you know, she was just kind of saying, you know, I was kind of explaining that to whoever the creator was, that if you don't have a regular issue, retailers aren't necessarily going to jump up and down and buy the next one when it comes out. You know, and I think she understood a little bit about that because of, you know, she's working on a distant soil and trying to make a living at it. And then, you know, it didn't come out necessarily regularly, but when it did come out, there was much rejoicing. Yay. And of course, nowadays, well, back then, I ordered from Cold Cut Distribution, who only existed to carry smaller press books. I think Dark Horse might have been the biggest they carried. So that if
now, Dark Horse went exclusive with Diamond during the big distribution collapse.
Yeah, and for a while
I know that their biggest in terms of sales was Fantagraphics.
But if I wanted to carry like a ripoff press, or I needed back issues of Poison Elves, or they would be the one to go to because they would actually solicit the publishers and the creators to have their books in stock when I need it. And I think I usually ordered from them at least once a month, just to fill in the little gaps. Whereas Diamond, sure, they paid lip service. They basically kept Marvel DC in stock almost constantly. And again, when the distributor wars settled, it wasn't a deal where Diamond bought the physical inventory like they would an individual creator and sold it. They were more brokers. They got a piece of the action every time something would sell. And it was always problems with, you know, volumes 1, 2, and 5 are in print, but nothing else is. And even nowadays, that's still a big problem. But Cold Cut was there. They definitely had a niche to fill. Nowadays, especially with Facebook and creator-owned interest, if Colleen Doran has an issue of A Distant Soil ready to come out, she can alert her followers and fans that, hey, it's ready to go. She just solicited a book she was doing with Neil Gaiman. And for the life of, my previews is upstairs because I was working on it. We talked about the Stan Lee hardcover regular book that I borrowed to you that she did the illustration for. And we all knew it was coming because she was promoting it real heavily. So, you know, there's different media, different ways to get out to let people know. But back then in the 90s, you know, and it could have showed up in previews. Previews might not have even carried it. There was always talk of some book or another that dropped because they didn't meet Diamond's minimum.
There still are. There's still, you know, we had a guy months ago who I tried doing an interview with. Sorry, that sound you heard was me rolling my eyes so hard it hurt my brain.
And they fell out.
Yeah.
But he said, oh, you know, I'm going to put together this new distributor for independent books.
Oh, I remember that.
And look, buddy, if you can't even show up for an interview on time, no retailer in the world is going to give you money. You know, Diamond, for all of their flaws, is unbelievably professional. They are a huge organization. They have accountants. They take care of their bills. They work with UPS so that every comic shop gets all of their books on the same day, no matter where in the country they are. And here's a guy who can't even be bothered to show up on time for an interview at noon on a Saturday that's supposed to be his day off. I don't really think that. And I'm now getting emails about, I would say every month or so, for a new group that's saying, we're creating an independent distribution network for creator-owned comics. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't think it's going to happen. The creators are going to be like the folks who do Ghoul Scouts, who, you know what, we've got this book, we're going to find a publisher who's already in Diamond, and work with them and put a deal together with them. And since I brought up Ghoul Scouts, I thought, since we had Mark and Steve on the show a while back, why don't we just review the darn book?
That was a nice segue.
Yes, as Jen is getting a hold of us from another room.
I'm under the desk because I was trying to plug something in, and I live in a really, really fucking old building, and sometimes the outlets in my office don't work, and so I have to jiggle the cord until the electricity connects.
And I am not making this up.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Jiggle. Don't lie. You were down there eating another pretzel sandwich.
I was
sandwich.
Not eating anything off the floor or otherwise.
So, Joe, did you pick up your copy of Ghoul Scouts?
I did.
Did you read the Ghoul Scouts?
I did.
And could you please give us a review of the Ghoul Scouts?
I like it. Jen, what did you think of it?
Oh, God.
I like it. You know, it's cute. There wasn't too much or too little dialogue. I like the art. I like the coloring. It's a little bit dark in places, and I don't know if that's a symptom of the original art or the coloring or just the printing, because I know sometimes when you color on the computer, like, it can look kind of dark when you print it. So I had, you know, it was a little bit dark in a few places, but nothing, you know, really terrible or anything like that. But it's clearly a comic that's written for kids. You know, I could follow it, so maybe I should stop reading things made for adults. I also appreciated that it's a comic book. It's not, you know, a 1,000-page novel that someone sent us to review, where I feel guilty for, like, bailing on it a third of the way in because I just don't have time to read all that unless I, you know, something I'm really into.
Well, and you and Joe both are, like, an hour before the show, what was it we were supposed
pretty
to read?
Pretty much, pretty much. But, you know, I mean, that's the story of my entire life right now. I mean, it's all just by the seat of my pants. But I did go, you know, on Saturday.
Pretty awesome pants.
On Saturday, I went to the Source and I saw Mark. And I picked up two copies of the book there, and he signed them for me, and I watched him draw for a little bit and just, you know, chit-chatted. There was a lot of people there. It was busy in the store. I hadn't really been there for very long. So that was fun. So, yeah, it's definitely good, and I will probably maybe keep reading it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to read more books, but I tend to myself, you know, you're talking about serialization. I tend to like things that are finished. So, you know, the TV show that everybody's talking about, I'll watch it all when it's over. So I tend to pick up the comics I do read. I tend to like the graphic novels of series that are completed or at least, you know, have a lot of meat to them in, like, one go. I guess that doesn't make sense after I just complained about you giving me too much to read.
Yeah, well, your mind is vast. It contains contradictions.
It does. Ghoul Scouts is great. I love it. If you are a child, you will probably like it. If you are a child-minded person like me, you will probably like it.
One of the things that struck me as I read it was I am used to Mark's superhero art. Yes, he's been drawing minions and other stuff at conventions, but I am used to his superhero stuff. And I enjoy his superhero stuff. So when I picked this up, it almost looked like animation art. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought he did a really good job of differentiating the characters. I'm missing something.
I guess this is going to be a regular thing now, because as soon as you start talking, like, my screen fills up with Joe liking my posts on my timeline on Facebook.
Yeah.
I got to do something.
Go on, I'm sorry.
You could pay attention.
Well, if you were paying attention, you'd notice back in Crazy Comics and Stories 253, the Comics and Pizza, I already reviewed this book. So what you could do, if you really care, is go back, lift that soundbite, and just drop it in right here. Or just go back and download 253, go to Geeking, and catch it there.
Yeah, we don't do reruns. We're not slackers.
Okay, keep talking. It was like the animation art style. You see, I was paying attention.
See, I like the animation art style. I like that the characters were all differentiated.
Still on the floor.
In that their personality came through in how their character was designed. The story moved quickly, but for a first issue, I wanted a little more. Of why they were there, why there were zombies, why there were all these things, if it's going to be a part of the story. So my only complaint would be the pacing was this in some ways felt more like a tease for a story than an actual story. And I think especially for a first issue on a kid's book, they should be able to pick it up, read it, and feel like they got a story that still has pieces for the next issue.
These kids are some stone-cold motherfuckers.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because, you know, like, I know if I was, like, camping and there was, like, actual honest-to-God zombies, I probably would just shit myself and curl into a ball. But these kids just run with it. They're like, hey, zombies, where's my baseball bat? So, I mean, that's really dark, you know? Like, it just comes through, like, that subtext.
The other thing I really liked about it is zombies can be used in anything. I honestly believe that zombies are kind of a cultural zeitgeist right now where we project what we want onto them. But this was done in a way where it wasn't – it was horror, but for kids. And it reminded me a lot of the Hanna-Barbera stuff from the 70s where kids were really into horror in the 70s. But, you know, they're also 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, so you don't want, you know, you don't want blood, you don't want death, you don't want all that stuff. You just want a good scare. And I think this comic did a really good job of having a really good scare without being, you know, it used the horror elements in an age-appropriate way. I picked it up off Comixology and read it on my tablet. The panel-to-panel that Comixology does was excellent, and Mark's work really lends itself to that. And just swiping through panel-to-panel and then going ahead and looking at the whole page, it works really well on a tablet. It's only 99 cents on Comixology, so if you're a parent, this would be a good comic to pick up off Comixology for your kids to read. And I'm going to say, what's our scale? Keep. What is
beg,
it?
Beg, borrow, or steal?
No, buy, borrow, buy. I don't know. Beg, borrow, or steal. We're going to use that from now on. Beg is you beg to buy it. Borrow, you'll borrow it. Steal, somebody could steal it from you.
No, it was. Are you gonna buy it?
Bypass. Borrow.
Buy, borrow, or pass. That's it.
Okay.
Buy, borrow, or pass.
You can see that we haven't done a review in a while.
I remembered, sort of. Joe
helped. Glad some. Buy, borrow, or pass, Joe.
I already bought it, and I have the other ones on order as comic form. I don't think I'll buy the graphic novel as I will have had it already. Jen?
Jen?
I bought it once, but not just once, but twice. So I was like, give me the special one and the other special one. And then they tried to sell me a third regular one, and I was like, that's a bit much. But I will probably continue buying it and reading it because Mark's my new friend, and I love buying stuff from people I know. So buy it. Buy it if you are a child. Buy it if you are a child-minded person.
And I say borrow and you don't need to be a child. This reminds me a lot of the really good Uncle Scrooge stories in that kids can enjoy it, but it's also well done enough that as an adult you can like it too. So it gets three big thumbs up from us. The other thing that is brought up in this article that I thought Jen could chime in on, the guy who wrote it writes about, from 1988, what is called the Creator's Bill of Rights. And a number of comic creators got together in 88 during the time when there weren't a lot of creator-owned comics. And they wrote up a Bill of Rights. And, let's see, it's Steve Bissett, Gerhardt, Larry Marder, Mark Martin, everybody who worked at Mirage Studios, which were the people who put together the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scott McCloud, Richard Pini, Dave Sim, Rick Veitch, and Michael Zulli. So here we go. Number one, the right to full ownership of what we fully create.
Which
and
is always an argument, because even to this day, they're still pissing and moaning over who created what.
Yeah. But, Jen, I'd like your reaction to these as if, you know, as someone who's didn't come into comics till much, much later, the fact that people actually had to write this down and say, this is what we want. Kind of your idea of what this means now as a comic creator who pretty much does her own thing.
Yeah, well, that's a foreign concept to me, you know. I mean, I've always done my own thing and then assumed I own, you know, what I made. So, I mean, I guess the fact that they felt the need to write that down, there's been a pretty big cultural shift since then.
Number two, the right to full control over the creative execution of that which we fully own.
English, please.
In other words, let's say you own something, the publisher can't go turn around and sell the rights to the movie to somebody else.
That makes sense.
And even though Eclipse was supposedly creator-owned, when they went bankrupt, Todd McFarlane bought them lock, stock, and barrel, including books that were creator-owned. And that's how we got the Miracle Man mess. And that's why we haven't seen some of the stuff that was created at Eclipse republished, because Scott actually has the physical ownership of the film. We're not going to see an Aztec Ace trade paperback till Todd McFarlane gives someone the film so they can reprint it. The right of approval over the reproduction and format of our creative property. That is, if I draw a comic, you'll publish it in a format I want. If I want it to be a 32-page comic, it'll be a 32-page comic. If I want it to be a 64-page comic, basically you can't publish this in a book that I don't have approval of. The right of approval over the methods by which our creative property is distributed. Which is, you can't sell our you can't change our book and sell it through distributors that we don't know about.
Who is the you in these scenarios? Because if you're creating your own stuff, you know, who are you talking to when you write this?
You are talking to the publishers, because back in 88, self-publishing was very, very small. Joe, do you, other than Dave Sim and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, were there any really big self-publishers back then?
ElfQuest was a little bigger. And a lot of them would come and disappear and things like that. I think more what they're talking about is, like, Jim, say you took your cartoons that you made of rats, all your strips, and you gave it to Marvel Comics with the rights to, okay, you're going to print this in a book form for me. And then all of a sudden you turn around and find out Marvel turned around and sold the movie rights to some company who wants to make kids' movies about rats. Didn't give you a dime on it.
No, they gave her the money, but she didn't
approve
but they
it?
Told her after the fact.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we sold your rights to Disney to make an animated film of, you know, you and your rats.
So what do they do with this Bill of Rights? Is this just like a, you know, they just stick it on the wall and remind me, like, I'm going to tell them not to do those things? Or is it some kind of, like, legal contract they had people sign? Like,
it was a lot of venting, I think, and
a lot of
ways to
reinforcement.
Correlate.
It was a manifesto.
Their ideas. So they're all, like, thinking
they're
on
like
the same
Luther
page.
They're like Luther posting the list of things on the church door.
Which is
exactly.
Actually okay. A myth. That never happened. But
thank you, Mr. Wikipedia.
No, Mr. History. Go to crack.com. You'd be surprised what's
you've
not
been
in
learning
your
life. Off of Cracked.
I'd learn when I'm on Cracked, sure. But the best part about crack.com is they always, would you say, link to the actual
source?
Yeah, scholar article if you want to go read that. Screw that. Just give me the humorous posts and I'm good.
They source their information.
But, I mean, Corey, this whole Bill of Rights, I mean, it was kind of, did it have an effect on anything, or was it just a bunch of guys jerking in the dark?
I think this Bill of Rights, first off, as I'm reading this, you guys are going, well, yeah, so, big deal. That's how it works. It wasn't back then. Let's remember in 86, Jack Kirby finally got his original art back from Marvel after a 3-year legal fight. Art that Marvel didn't own. Art that the court said, you have the right to what he drew, but the actual physical artwork is still the property of the artist. This was really early on in creator-owned stuff. And this, the right to approval over, no, it's, yeah, the right to approval over the methods of which our creative property is distributed, and what's the other one? The right of free movement of ourselves and our creative property to and from publishers. If a publisher went under, and this is what happened with Eclipse. Eclipse went under, Scott McFarlane bought everything up, in bankruptcy court and said, well, I'm the publisher of this stuff now. I own it now. Whereas a lot of the people had, they had creator-owned contracts, but when the company dissolved and went away, the contracts became null and void. And the next one is the right to employ legal counsel in any and all business transactions. I cannot tell you how many times someone would go to, would be working at either Marvel or DC. They would be offered a contract. They would say, I'm going to have my lawyer look at this, and the contract would be pulled. There's a very famous thing that happened in 68 where a number of the people who'd been working at DC for 10, 15, 20 years decided, we don't want to work freelance. We want contracts, and DC was okay with that, and we want our lawyers to look over the contracts, and they were all let go. Just, psh, you're out of work. And these were people who'd worked for DC for, as I said, up to 20 years. Gardner Fox. If you go through your Doctor Strange collection, Joe, you're going to see Gardner Fox did a few Doctor Strange stories. Gardner Fox wrote for DC forever, and then, oh, you want a lawyer to look at your contract? Well, then you're never working for DC ever, ever again. These were kind of the creators were going to get together and say, we're not going to be pushed around by the publishers anymore. And, you know, you could go online and read the rest of it, but to me, I thought it was really interesting how at this time, this was considered radical. This was considered, oh, that's just crazy talk. Because the way the industry worked back then, you would create your idea, you would go to a publisher, and the publisher would either take it or not. And they would tell you what rights you have. You know, if you worked at Marvel and you said, hey, I've got this idea for a series, they'd go, they would decide whether they wanted it or not, and they would give you a work-for-hire contract. But I created this. No, we only do work-for-hire. Sorry, that's what we do. That was what the Howard the Duck lawsuit that was about. Marv Wolfman sued over the character Blade, who he had created in his own kind of self-published world. And when he was working on Tomb of Dracula, brought the character in and was told at the time, oh, yeah, you know, you'll get royalties for the character. And then he left and went to D.C. And, well, where are my royalties? Well, you work for D.C. now. You have no rights.
That's some shit.
It's how it used to work.
Yeah, comics were kind of a backwater of the publishing world. And the problem was, is even if you as a creator decided, I don't want to put up with this, I'm not going to sign it, they'd find someone else to.
I've talked about the comic Skull the Slayer repeatedly. It was created by Marv Wolfman. He brought it in, started publishing it. He was no longer editor-in-chief, so they said, oh, we're going to give your book to Steve Englehart, and he's going to write it. Then Steve Englehart quit rather than give it back to Marv Wolfman. Now we're going to give it to Bill Manlow, and he's going to write it. And this was a book that he created, brought into Marvel, and said, here, publish this. Okay. At least now, you know, Rob Liefeld made kajillions of dollars off Deadpool because at least Marvel would say, okay, if you created the character, you sign these forms, and in this you get a certain percentage of funds for the character you create. Oddly enough, he's not getting much for the character Forearm, Joe.
Who?
Forearm. You know, the character in X-Force that had four arms.
Oh, yeah.
Because he thought the name Forearm was cool.
Oh, good thinking there.
Now, Joe, when you were ordering books, did you ever give special preference to creator-owned books, or did you just treat them as normal comics?
I always tried to order two of anything, even if I didn't have any pre-orders on it. A lot of times it was easy if I had somebody pre-order it. I always bring up the example of, like, She Number One that came out, because it totally escaped my radar, but I had, like, 20 people order it. So I figured, well, it's a new book. You know, it looks pretty decent. I ordered, I think, 20 for the shelf, and I ended up being the only person in town with it because it was like a super hot book that appeared. And so, we were actually ahead of the curve. But, like I said, it didn't matter. If it was someone I liked, like I do remember when I had Crazy Comics think Eric Larson came up with this idea. You know, if every publisher would just, or sorry, every retailer would order just 5 copies for the shelf, it could improve the sales that much more, and people get a chance to do it. A lot of times you'd get the phenomena where somebody come in, oh, do you have Savage Dragon? We sold out. Well, how many did you order? Well, we just ordered, you know, enough for subscribers, or I just ordered one for the shelf. And you sold it. Did you think to reorder or order more? No, we'll just keep selling out. You know, again, lazy retailers leaving money on the table. And people like Eric Larson would hear this over and over and over again. I can't find your book because they won't order it, or it's not on the shelves or whatever. You know, and of all the image creators, he's probably the only one that's actually come out to a fairly regular book. And, you know, he's not by any means monthly. So, yeah, I always try. When I had the big store, we could do like I'd said earlier. You know, I'd sell Spawn, X-Men, Batman, Superman, and I could afford to get at least 1 or 2 copies of whatever type of book. If it was somebody I knew, like Jen mentioned, I'd probably order 5 of them. We ended up, and I can't remember the name of the creator, but when the guy who created Brewhead, I got to be friends with. And so I'd always order 10 of his book, no matter what, just leave them on the shelf. And we sold quite a few of them. Never.
And a lot of it that was, a lot of that was because you enjoyed the book, you pushed it.
Yeah.
And I think because of a retailer investment, there's that. But now you've got this online component. And guess what, Jen? I'm bringing you into the conversation.
Hello.
When you were doing your web strip, there was a period where you were putting it out regularly. Uh-huh. Boom, boom, boom. I think, what, 2 times a week or 3 times a week?
It varied. So, I mean, I would maintain one schedule for a while, and I had to change it a few times. But more often than not, Lunch Break updated on Tuesdays and Thursdays. My other strip ended up doing, like, I was doing them originally in sets of 5, so I would do, like, a 3 1-week, 2 1-week, 3 1-week kind of, and that one got played around with more because I was having a hard time working then, but during its reliable period, Lunch Breaks were Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And when you were more reliable, how fast did the audience grow compared to when you became less reliable? How fast did that audience go away?
It's hard to say. I built up a good amount of momentum, but the landscape is very different now compared to then. I mean, I can distribute my work and make money on Patreon and sell art, and I don't even really have to touch my websites anymore. In fact, there's unfinished parts of them that have been that way for a year and a half. Because people tend to play more in the social media sandbox now. So, I mean, I can talk about, it did build more audience when I was more reliable or was on a set schedule. But that was because everyone was going to open your web browser on Tuesday or Thursday morning to look at your page. And I don't know quite how many people do that anymore. You know, It depends on the kind of work you do, too. Like, I'm so scattershot with what I do now. But I do know that, you know, for my friends who still primarily use the model of having your stuff on a website, which it's always good to have that browsable archive for people to go read through at any time. I know that I'm fairly certain that web traffic in general is kind of flatlined or dropping or kind of stagnating, because I know certain sites that I've purchased ads from, you know, I remember the kind of impressions, and when you buy ads, they often give you access to some statistics on page loads and things like that, and sites that I used to get like a pretty good bang for the buck am advertising on, I don't get that anymore because the traffic isn't what it used to be. So that's not particular to me, but it's hard to compare it to experience now because everything is so social media central. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to point out, I've got the actual image sales charts up right now. And let's go with Saga. Saga is one of their better-selling books. Year to year, it's lost about 10.8% of its sales. So, like, number 27 sold about 54,000. Number 36 sold 48,000. And if you look at the trade sales, it's part of that is people migrating to trades. They also, they will publish six issues, take a three-month break, six issues that take a three-month break. Another book that does decent trade sales and is one of my favorite comics being published, Velvet, which is one of the Ed Brubaker books. It's a spy story. It had five issues come out in the last year, and it has dropped 17%. And it's not picking up those trade sales because they have not had a trade come out in the last year. It went from 15,720 to 12,980. Whereas Invincible, which sells right below it, comes out every month and has only lost 8.7% year to year because it comes out every month. I think retailers, you know, Joe was kind of a special retailer when he had the big store because he had room to make more mistakes and he was very indie friendly for a mainstream shop, much like how The Source, in my opinion, is very indie friendly for a mainstream shop. They're not like Big Brain, but they carry the indies. They do okay with the indies. But your average superhero shop, if you go 3 months between issues, that retailer is going to forget who you are.
There's definitely some attrition and a benefit to you want to stay in people's, you know, minds. That people can be so easily distracted, you know, if something isn't coming out regularly, it just kind of drops off your radar.
I thought it was interesting in this month's previews, and I think it was IDW definitely, and it was one other publisher saying of a book that wasn't in that particular month saying, it'll be back August 2016, or say, you know, it's not here this month, but it'll be here next month. So I think people are maybe realizing, yeah, hey, if you're not going to do a monthly book, or bi-monthly or whatever, remind people, hey, it's coming. Because I thought that was fairly significant. I can't tell you the number of times I have missed a book because they decided they weren't going to publish it monthly. And so I ordered number one, and then by the time number two is ordered, 2 or 3 months later, I totally forgot. Because, you know, you're vying for how many hundreds, if not thousands, of products in that previews catalog. And those are the bigger publishers. You know, God forbid a smaller publisher who just has, you know, one column inch to hawk their wares. Remember this book? I published it 2 years ago.
Yeah, remember me? 5 years ago, I put out the last issue. Here's the new one. One of my problems with buying new books from these really small publishers is I'll look through and I'll go, oh, that looks interesting. Oh, it's on issue four. I'll wait for the trade.
If it ever comes, and then when it comes, you might forget you were interested to begin with.
And not to be mean or anything, but obviously you didn't make a big impression on me in the past. And if you don't make a big impression on me in the past, there's so much stuff that you're going to get lost. Because remember, when you're a comic creator, you're not just competing with other comics now. You're competing with Netflix and Hulu and television and video games.
YouTube.
And YouTube and web
Wikipedia.
Comics and all this stuff. We're about to see an explosion in streaming services. I would say by the end of the year, you know, you've got your big ones right now. You've got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got Amazon, and you've got some smaller ones like Crackle. But Yahoo tried it. They failed miserably. Pardon me while I sigh for the fact that I will not get another season of Community because of that. But you've got Turner Classic Movies is going to start a streaming site. CBS, you want that new Star Trek show? You're going to have to subscribe to their streaming stuff. NBC has got streaming. ABC is going to do a Disney streaming service. You're competing against all these eyeballs. And if you're not putting your stuff out on a regular basis, you're going to get lost. And as a retailer, you really can't afford to keep stacking up books hoping they'll sell. Joe had one rare exception to that. Joe, do you know what I'm talking about?
It's so rare, I forgot.
What were those cowboy comics that you would buy?
Oh, the AC ones.
And Mike, Big Mike, would give you shit every time.
Yeah, and then what would happen is one guy came in every 3-4 months and bought every single one of these. And this is back when comics, what were comics, $1.99, $2.99?
Yeah.
And
these were expensive.
$5 to $6 comics. It's like, yep, I'll order one of each. They'll sit on the shelf. And as long as this guy comes in and buys it, I'll keep doing it. And as far as I know, he did it up. I don't know what he thought when he came in and after I had left. And the store had transformed into the soon-to-be-defunct Hot Comics St. Paul.
And then the further-to-be-defunct Christie's Comics.
Yeah. But that's, you know, when I was used to track the comics, that was something that I found interesting. And, you know, it's a different subject, but, you know, I would track weekly how things would sell up to 2 months because I had bigger shelves, I had bigger wall space, I could let them sit there. So I had an idea if something didn't sell, you would see, you know, the same number, 5, 5, 5, 5 across the entire month. Sometimes, though, you'd just watch it and it would slowly sell out to 2 months. And my model changed. It used to be if you had a shop in the 70s and 80s, soon as that book was off sale and you got the new one, you'd bag and board it, slap it up for anywhere from a dime to a quarter, become a back issue.
Yep.
But now,
Shinders, that's what we did.
Yep.
You would take the old issue off sale, unless it was the X-Men or Spider-Man. You'd take the old issue off sale, put either 1, 2, or 3, depending on how well it sold, in your back issues, ship the rest downtown to be put in the basement.
Yep, and now it's different, and you see it at Hot Comics and The Source and some other stores. They leave the books ad nauseum. You know, I would leave the books until they spilled over the lip. We had, a 4-inch lip that the books could rest against, and it laid flat so you could see the cover. Occasionally, if I knew there was, like we talked about Vision, you know, if I had now a Vision 1 through 5, those would be some fairly sought-after back issues, or even Flashpoint now. I mean, I'd be digging the Flashpoint out because with the DC Rebirth, people are like, hey, something's going on with this Flashpoint. But if it didn't sell, it would just be there until I bumped it for a title that would sell.
Or I would go, yeah, these are about to spill over, time to make some sets.
Yeah, yep.
Now, one of the things that I found with the podcast is whenever we take kind of a step up, I can look and I can see that people are going through the archives because I'll go, oh, look, people are downloading episodes 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Nobody's touched those in a couple of months. Oh, now there's a bump because people discovered the new stuff and they go back. And, you know, Jin, you talked about how you don't track that as well as it used to. Back during the heyday, did you see that happen? You would go to a convention or something would happen to get you some buzz, and you'd look and you'd see that people went through the archive.
Oh, definitely, and, like, definitely. Thrones. You could watch it because you could get a small influx of traffic, but your page loads would skyrocket, and it was from new people trolling through the archive. So definitely.
And with creator-owned books, I think the way the comic shop economics work, you could get that with trade paperbacks, but after a while those trade paperbacks aren't going to be available. You know, Marvel has done a number of Ms. Marvel series and they trade paperbacked each one of them, but I bet if you wanted to go back and get those trade paperbacks of the Ms. Marvel series from the Civil War time, no, not the 1860s, the comic series Civil War.
You mean, I got an autographed one from Lincoln. Trying to get the Lee ones are tough.
But I doubt you can find those trade paperbacks anywhere. Because there's just, oh yeah, that was 3 series ago and nobody cares. You know who does care, though?
The sponsors?
These guys.
Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks
sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, biweekly, monthly. And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world. And remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right. Those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors.
See, I've got you guys trained. I don't even have to say it anymore.
That's because we think it's funny.
We do.
And after we talk about our sponsors, we ask Joe, Joe, what's going on the eBays?
We'll get to it in freaking.
Oh. Jen.
Uh-huh.
What's going on with your art stuffs?
Oh, well, I've been continuing my experiments with time-lapse movie making. So I made another one of those last night, which is the main reason why I only got 3 hours of sleep. Well, I just have only so many hours in the day, so.
So does this mean soon you'll be making little stop-motion dinosaur movies?
You know, I may. That's not the same thing as time-lapse, though. So the first video I did that I made, like, over a year ago, which was quote-unquote time-lapse, was actually stop-motion, like, in the sense that I would draw a little stop, take a picture, draw a little stop, take a picture, and it made it take forever. And I'm like, I can't do that. So, you know, now it's just a continuous stream of software that's taking the images at regular intervals and then slapping it back together into a film. And so I finished one, and I'm going to be trying to do at least one of these a week where you can watch me live draw one of my Sharpie pieces. So that's pretty exciting.
Coolness.
Yeah, and I'm going to start going out to some local art shows. So I should be at one of the Artist Street shows, kind of watch my Facebook and the front page of my site for a little more details on that. I've been talking to one of the people that run the show, and I still have to get them some paperwork and buy a 8-foot show table, but I'm looking into getting out more in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Been meeting other
more St. Paul than Minneapolis.
More St. Paul than Minneapolis, because like I've told you and I've told a bunch of other people, I've already been here long enough that I complain and grumble about having to drive over to Minneapolis, even though it's only like 10 hours away. I don't want to cross the river.
10 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
10 hours.
You know, with the road construction season, she's not too far off.
Yeah, so this thing is, yeah, road construction season. I guess we can talk about that when I get to freaking, because I actually didn't have a freaking.
Normally I don't do this, but Jen, could you toss it to me?
What are you doing lately?
If you head on over
working
to worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, as of last Tuesday, new strips are appearing.
What?
What?
Believe it or not, Dangerous Dan Moore, who I interviewed 2 weeks ago now, the reason we did the interview was to promote the fact that Worldwide News has started up again. It's election year, and I can't let an election year go by without making fun of what's going on cable news. And not only has the strip started to reappear, but guess what will be appearing at Convergence July 4th weekend? The first collected book of Worldwide News will be coming out at Convergence. It's not just the strips in a book, because you could go online, you can read the strips for free. Nope, it is DVD commentary, it is behind-the-scenes work, it is the original pitch that was sent out to a number of artists, it's Dan's preliminary artwork, and it is the characters commenting on my DVD commentary for the strips. So it's going to be available at Convergence, and then after that it will be available for sale on worldwidenews.com or over at More Creations. More news to come. And there's more.
Is it also for sale at Convergence, or is it free there? Because you emphasized that it was for sale online.
It's for sale at Convergence. Well, Dan needs to make some money.
But the question is, are you going to give me and Jen a free copy so we can review it on this here podcast?
Probably, but first I need
always angling for a freebie. That's the bottom line.
I don't know if I could listen to you guys do a review, so you may have to record it without me because I have a sensitive ego.
We are all over that, like Oprah and Dark Chocolate Cluster.
I don't want Dan to cry.
Well, then don't be mean.
He never cries. He's got Wolfie.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, you know, you make Dan mad, Wolfie might not hit on you anymore.
Oh, no.
My problem is if I make Dan sad, Wolfie will hit on me much more. But, Joe, we have a convention appearance.
Do I have to be there? I mean, how?
It is in St. Cloud at LionCon the last Saturday of August.
Oh, I'm out.
And not only will we be there, not only will we have a table, but it goes from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
That's ridiculous.
And I will be live streaming. And we may have guests aplenty.
Well, good.
I am looking at getting some co-hosts to help me.
I have problems getting Saturday off works aplenty, so we'll see what happens. I may have to take a rare sick day.
But I am working with people tomorrow to get set up so that it's not just me talking for 12 hours. Lord knows I enjoy doing that.
I'm going to watch Corey's gradual descent into madness as he just sits there desperately trying to fill hours of time.
I don't know. I was able to fill 15 hours, and the only time I really kind of lost it was when Joe left the camera empty.
Whiny bitch.
Damn straight I am.
Yeah, well, but you had lots of people around you. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, you got to admit, it did liven up when I turned the whole laptop around so you could actually see the people walking by.
We're learning!
Although he did get a little upset when Butch and I were practicing our Zen moment.
And we did have the sound working.
Oh, that was actually kind of very blissful.
I don't know, it was kind of odd that the Monday after the convention, that was the one that had been watched the most.
Let's see. Oh, they got something for 10 minutes. Holy shit, that one's 15 hours!
No, least, it was 8 and 7.
At least you divided it up into little one-hour bites. So
yes, I've got two more to do, and I just have not had the computer time to do it. But Crazy Comics and Stories is on the road, and Solitaire Rose Productions is got all sorts of new things. And
we have a huge extension cord, so no matter where we go, it'll be right behind us.
And not only that, we got a new podcast that we will be talking about next week, joining the Solitaire Rose Network.
Slurred.
That's called a tease.
Yeah.
How'd I do? Because you guys are the ones who usually do all the promotion for your own stuff. How'd I do for the promotion stuff?
You're a little self-conscious.
Yeah,
I'm trying to decide if this whole episode is another way of me doing a solo Joe. The whole, you know, well, if you don't do it, people aren't going to listen and your podcast won't go up.
Oh, I thought he was trying to make me draw shit.
Yeah, he's a subtle son of a bitch. I'll give you that. You are definitely a rat bastard.
Now we get to my favorite part of the show, freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Oh, thanks for bringing that up. Oh, man. All the way back, 1986. He shot in the chest, causing gout of fire and smoke to issue from his eyes and mouth.
Joe.
Oh, poor Prowl. Oh, and then they took down Braun, Ironhide, and his ambulance doppelganger, Ratchet, Windcharger, Wheeljack, and then, of course, the big one, Optimus Prime, dead. Yes, I'm talking about the Transformer, the movie. This time, 1986, it came out, and what was interesting about it, which is why it remains a cult hit to this day, is how Hasbro just came out with the idea that, you know what, we've got these 87 toys that we don't make anymore. Let's kill a few off in the movies and transform a few into brand new spankling toys. No, what they did is
spankling?
They caused
spankling?
An entire
spankling.
Generation of kids to weep
like a
bitterly
sparkly spanking?
At the death.
I'm going to go to Urban
like that.
Dictionary.
I kind of like that when you say that. But you thought the backlash, I mean, Prime's death, the backlash was so fierce that they relented and had to bring the character back. There were rumors of kids weeping in their bathroom being taken out of the theater because they were not expecting their number one hero, Prime, to So we bite the bucket. It was sad. But it's only business, kids. Hasbro says, we didn't know he was an icon. It was a toy show. We just thought we were killing off old product to replace it with new. So that was kind of sad.
Jen?
Huh.
Spankling.com is not taken.
What? I got distracted.
Although, you know, I went to the interwebs to look up the word spankling to see if it was, you know, like some hip new word that the hipsters are using, you know, that the kids are into. And no, I couldn't find anything there, so I put in spankling.com. Couldn't find anything. Now, it's not always safe to do that because there are certain things you just shouldn't put into a search engine, like Lemon Party. For the love of God, do not look up Lemon Party. Do not. Do not. Trust me.
Do not look up two crays and a cup.
They're going to look up Lemon Party, Joe.
That is so, like, years ago.
What? I am not letting it go.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But what else are you freaking on, Joe?
It's to be
other
buried with the crickets.
I'm going to have to reach deep into the vault and put things on eBay that I probably hadn't planned to put on eBay.
Uh-oh.
A couple things, for example, I have a Jaws Deluxe Box playset that Todd McFarlane did. Oh, when was that? It was back like 2000. Beautiful set, because Todd, talking about crazy people, was nuts when he came out with his toys. And this particular one I used as a store display. We basically slid it out, played with the little, what was the character that got eaten by Jaws very vividly?
That was Quint.
Quint, yeah. You can actually, in the picture, you can see Quint sticking out of Jaws' mouth, and the actual character snaps in half, kind of like Darth Maul. So we were playing with that quite a bit. But when I was done, we didn't untie the playset. We just put it back in. Now, this playset goes for like $200 to $300 sealed. Mine, I'm starting at $99 just because it's open. You know, you can play with it. I also found some Sailor Moon collectible card games, the two-player starter decks, which run like about $40 a piece, and the packs, which are like $7 to $10 a piece, and I put a bunch of those on eBay way below what they start at. And I'm even reaching deeper into the vault, pulling out things that I probably never would have sold. Because, Corey was giving me shit before the show because I'm not going to his wonderful world of con planning tomorrow night. Because my ceiling in my living room fell down.
What?
I've got plaster of Paris all over the mantle. It almost took out my Mickey's Diner, Department 56 thing. We got dust all over. And before I even went out today, it's like, whatever adhesive kept the stuff to the ceilings wearing out, because now not only did the one piece fall, and believe me, scared the living bejesus out of my wife, but then there was another piece that's starting to fall. So I went up and pulled that down, and that was a cluster and a half. But we got some guy coming over tomorrow to look at it, and hopefully by then more of the ceiling will not fall. This is heavy type plaster stuff. If it hits anything or anybody, it's going to break or hurt them. So, yeah, my ceiling's a disaster area, and somehow I'm going to have to pay for it. So if you feel guilty or you just want to help the old cray, just head over KRAYZ on eBay, and the offer still stands. If you see something you like and you do buy it, let me know. You listen to this here show, you listen to Jin's show, you just listen to Panels and Pizza. I don't care. And I'll take something out of my vast accumulation of crap, like the stuff I sent to the Matthew guy for counting how many times I passed back and forth in the background while Corey was interviewing somebody at the aforementioned 15-hour podcast. And I sent him the four graphic novels that were self-published by, or maybe it was through Eclipse, but Larry Mauder's Bean World. And the thing is,
Jin has one of my copies of that.
Oh, what Matt doesn't realize is, in order to get the rest of the story, he's going to have to go buy the Dark Horse versions, including I think it's Volume 2, which has the rest of the actual comic run, And then, of course, Volume 3 is an original story. And there's a little, I think, 3.4 that has some of the appearances from other places, like when there was Maximum Press, Rob Liefeld's anthology series had a story, and they did a couple one-shots with Dark Horse. I also, this is kind of a semi-geek, but he's real close on finishing book 4, which he said about 4 years ago would be done in 15 months, so not that I'm counting. So that's kind of what I've been freaking on. Jen, what are you freaking on?
You know, nothing really. Like I said at the beginning of the show, like I've had a lot of setbacks. I've had a lot of negative stuff happen lately. I've had a lot of little things go wrong I've had to deal with. I've had my anxiety flaring up pretty bad for a few reasons, and I just don't fucking care. I'm just going to deal with it and move on. So, yeah, there's shit going wrong, but I'm not freaking about it. Though I did enjoy your use of the phrase road work season, because I did notice, like, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, like, all of a sudden road work has cropped up everywhere, kind of along with the flowers and everything else.
Yeah. See, road work doesn't bother me as much because having lived here, I know the side streets. So if I, you know, if I run into something like, I'll get to this in geeking, but my daughter and I were out and we get up to 694, which is like down to two lanes. One is a tunnel lane, which has throughput. The other one is the one you get into if you want to exit the local streets. And it was gridlocked. So I just pulled off, went a couple miles north because I knew there was a highway that would take me to where I want to go. So what I should do is probably pick you up like one of those books of maps so you can kind of study your way. That way you can figure out when you hit a swath of road work, you'll be able to figure out, well, if I go this way, I'm going to get to where I need to and I don't have to, you know, wait in line.
Well, it's really, you know, only a problem when, like, the GPS doesn't know that our route has changed. Mm. Well, it's not so much the road work, like, as far as traffic delays, because I haven't really encountered that a whole lot, actually. But I was going downtown St. Paul for something, and the exit the GPS told me to take was just closed completely. And the way things are here, you know, you can go for quite a ways and get quite away from your original destination before you see another exit. You know, so it can be kind of hard to turn around, but I kind of know the area a little bit now well enough to kind of understand where I'm at, even if I don't really know, especially because, like, if you're anywhere near the river, you can see it or kind of tell, you know, where you're at. But I ended up on a really nice kind of scenic detour through the, I think it's Mounds Park area, and I took that picture on my Instagram. I actually just pulled over and stopped at the park for a little while because I wasn't in a hurry, and took that nice picture of downtown from across the water. So, you know, it's all good, but it has been kind of surprising because, you know, down in Houston they do road work year round forever and ever. It never ends. But I did notice that just I was all of a sudden like, what happened? Like, you know, like it there was so much of it so quickly, it seemed like something happened. It didn't occur to me that maybe they're like, oh, it's warm outside now, we got to take care of all this stuff. So I'm not freaking out about it. It's cool. It was just a surprise. What are you freaking on, Corey?
I got a promotion.
Quote, unquote.
And the reason it's a freaking, well, first off, at the, quote, full-time job, that's actually giving me full-time hours now. I was in a pod, which is as depressing as it sounds, of 8 people. And slowly, over the last month, it has dwindled down to 2 of us. Part of it is people going over to another client, and part of it is people who really just weren't able to keep up with the job.
Isn't that what they call a group of whales?
Yes. It's also what you are shoved into when you're in the Matrix. It's also what they use to create a plant version of you in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But there were 8 of us, and now there are 2. And
now you're
going to
have like
me.
A Thunderdome thing going on before too much longer.
And they came up to me and they said, well, Corey, you said you're looking for more to do and you're looking to, you know, move up and become a real live boy. No, wait, no, a real employee. So what we're going to do, we're going to have you answer all the emails for this client, do all the transcriptions for the people who leave comments for this client, and we're going to make you the team lead for this client.
You lucky bastard.
And I asked, well, how much of a raise is involved? And the answer was, Jen, answer please.
Sorry, I had my mic muted because I was eating some chips.
Then I'll do it again. nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
It was nothing at all. Nothing at all.
The raise is you get to keep your job. And the other person in the pod is this kind of reclusive girl who doesn't have a lot of a personality, does not think my stuff is funny, which is why you're seeing me.
Is that why she's
still there? Part of it is that, but it's also why you're seeing me post a lot more stupid jokes on Twitter. So if you want to follow me on the Twitter to see the kind of stuff I used to tell my coworkers to get a laugh. But yes, now the bad thing is that on like a day like Monday, when we get bombarded with calls, we have also had people emailing us all weekend. So my Mondays are hell. But by Wednesday, it's back to, 10, 15 calls a day, 4 or 5 emails. I get a little bored, but boy, Mondays and Tuesdays aren't a lot of fun. But I get to keep my job. The other thing I'm freaking on, I was in the group home Friday and found out that 3 more people have quit.
Nice knowing you, Corey.
Yeah, we're waiting for you to say, hey, I quit. I'm out of here.
No, that ain't happening. Because rather than quit, I'll go back to my regular schedule, which was every other weekend, 3 hours on Saturday and 8 hours. On Sunday. That's my regular schedule. Pause for laughter.
That's very logical.
Beep boop.
But that's what I'm freaking on. That's what I'm freaking on. The good thing is there's really nothing in comics I'm freaking on. Geeking. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I got me a Hot Wheel Yellow Submarine.
Aww, jealous.
With a, I know, it's really cool, and I haven't decided if I'm going to open it, but it's a new one for 2016, so you should be able to still find them if all the selfish Hot Wheel guys don't pick
are
them up.
Are they in the toy stores?
Yeah, and there's not only in the normal Hot Wheel line the Yellow Submarine itself, but there's also one of the collector lines that has different cars painted with the Yellow Submarine Beetles, and one is a Blue Meanie, and there's 6 of those. They originally showed up at the Cirque du Soleil Beatles Love out in Las Vegas. They're supposed to be in Walmarts now. They're all over eBays. So who knows when you're wandering. Unfortunately, they're Walmarts only. So if you happen to wander through
Walmart, God.
Yeah, that's or just buy one off of eBays. Or if you have friends in Vegas, and I'm hoping a friend in Vegas will contact me at crazycomics@gmail.com. Help me get a set of these, and maybe a couple.
I wonder, are they available on Walmart's website?
Possibly.
Probably not. Their website sucks.
Yeah,
but you don't have to go in the store.
But I mean, like, every time I try to, like, want something from Walmart's website, like, it always says get it in the store, or it's from some third-party seller. Like, their site really sucks.
So.
Now, Joe, as a Ruddles fan, is there going to be a Yellow Submarine sandwich?
Possibly. But we got to get.
How about the Tragical History Tour?
That was last year.
Okay, how about Let It Rot?
No.
Sergeant Rudder's Only Darts Club Band?
I had a bar at darts night, yeah. See, you're not tuned into the right people, Corey.
The Ruddles, a legend to last a lunchtime.
It was. Over the weekend, had a fun trip. We went down to Red Wing to visit with some friends, including a friend of mine I haven't seen in years.
Did you buy shoes?
We did stop at Red Wing Brewery, though. So that was actually kind of fun. It's a nice little pizza shop. A small brewery place. And they do their own root beer, which was fantastic. Not 1919 fantastic, but still pretty good. 1411 Old West Main Street in Red Wing. Fantastic pizza. Both red and white sauce. I like their white sauce a little bit better. So, a matter of fact, I just had me some right before the podcast because I don't share. And then today, my daughter surprised me, woke me up and goes, let's go geeking. Now, with Dana, when she grew up, it was like a given. You know, anytime she got bored, she was like, let's go to Toys R Us. And I'm like, sure. So, and, you know, I've bemoaned the idea that when we used to do geeking in the old days, there were a lot more smaller shops to go visit than there were today. Well, the first place we decided to go to was called the Blue Sun Soda Shop, which is the largest soda shop in the world, if not the universe. 1625 County Road 10 in Spring Lake Park, Minnesota. Blue Sun Soda Shop on Facebook, and that's their website. And I just wanted to share, I got here a box of sodas here. We didn't go bug nuts because, like I said, our ceiling had fallen down, so we didn't play. But the first one I drank was kind of a boring one, the Diet Dad's Root Beer, which I enjoyed. My daughter decided to go for Sprecher Fire Brewed Puma Cola, which was a gourmet soda. And let's see, we got... There's always Ask for Avery. We've got the two different ones, a green one and a purple one. I've got my Joe's Root Beer, and it's mine. It's not yours. I got the Kickapoo Fruit Shine, Corey. Time to ask.
They still make Kickapoo Joy Juice?
Yep. Where did Kickapoo Joy Juice come from?
That was from Lil Abner, and it was a euphemism for moonshine. And one of the things about Lil Abner, especially in the 50s, was that Al Capp was able to license everything.
Oh, yeah. Shmoo toys, and you get a good idea.
Well, here's the weird thing about the Shmoo. That story didn't last that long.
No.
When I read through the kitchen sink, 27 volumes, when it got to the Shmoos, I thought, oh, well, these characters have to be around all the time, because even as a kid in the 70s, I knew about the Shmoos. They even had a Shmoo cartoon, but the story itself was only about a 2-3 month story.
And then it went into the Sadie Hawkins storyline.
Yeah.
So.
But the Kickapoo Joy Juice lasted I'm surprised it's still around, because
they
again.
I picked up the Fruit Shine. Because as I mentioned, Chris caught me there, and you know, I got to stop checking in everywhere I go. And she said, don't be buying a lot. And I probably would have bought a lot because this is a lot of fun. I mean, I did sucker her up. I said, what's your favorite type of soda, dear? So I got her the original Fireman's Brew black cherry soda.
Joe, I have a ask the Joe question.
What is he doing?
Going through the bottles.
And I've got, Holly wanted a Jones soda, and she got berry lemonade. And
Joe,
for tomorrow, I got me Diet Jolt Cola. Ooh, man, I'm going to be wiry as hell tomorrow.
You already are. You've been like somebody fed you a whole pot of coffee before the show all night.
And you know, the thing was, is we got all this soda ready, and then I discovered an aisle of diet soda, and I thought, oh, crap, I'm going to have to come back.
I tried to ask what you were on, but you were talking so fast, I couldn't interrupt you.
Two questions, Joe.
Yes.
One, did they have Rat Bastard Root Beer?
Because
they had Joe's Root Beer.
I did ask them.
Which is for you, and Rat Bastard Root Beer is for me.
They were sold out. But it's coming. They're hoping they'll get some later this week. So if my ceiling goes up cheaply, I'll probably, because you know I'd buy a bunch just, you know, to have for the show.
My second question. Ask the Joe.
I don't know. Jen, do you think that has quite the same ring to it?
No, it doesn't.
How about just say, what? You know, time to jaw with Joe.
What was Dog Patch USA?
Wasn't that a theme park that lasted for a number of years and then eventually went away?
Yes, it was a theme park based on the Lil Abner comic strip, so it was kind of a hillbilly theme park.
When are we going to go ride roller coasters?
Soon.
Okay.
So then it went into bankruptcy, and for the last, I think it's like 25 or 30 years, they've announced every 2 or 3 years that it's coming back. And if you go online and look up the abandoned places entries for Dogpatch USA, it's really damn scary.
I think it closed in 93, and again, just looking quickly on Cheetahpedia, it says that in March 2016, the business partner wanted to sell a share of the park that he owned, and so the park was put up for sale again. However, he'd be happy to maintain half ownership in the park and sell the other half to a business partner. So if this year podcast takes up, maybe we'll have Crazy Comics USA.
It'd be better than Jellystone USA.
Yeah,
those
I've been there, and that wasn't that good. Well, they did always run the Flintstones over and over, but the same episode. So
yeah.
So after we finished going to the soda shop, we stopped by our good buddies at Dreamhaven, but lo and behold, they're closed on Mondays. My mistake. I had thought that with his new partner, they were going to stay open 7 days a week. But you got to rest someday, so no biggie. We're going to stop by tomorrow. Then I took Holly to Corey. I think I took you here once. We went to X-Man Surplus.
Yes.
Which
I love X-Man.
I went there too.
Oh, you've been there. Isn't it awesome? I mean, you see, they have a whole thing of rulers, and they call it nun weapons. It's just half the fun is just reading the signs there. And Holly ended up buying a lanyard, which I think I probably should have bought a bunch for us. It just says, "You bastard," on it. And I ended up finding some quarter envelopes and foldy things. So when I start selling CDs and things like that, I have an easier way to ship them. So after that, we decided to backtrack and go to the Electric Fetus, which is one of the premier independent record stores in the United States and definitely around here.
Record.
LPs, records, vinyl. They call it vinyl now. It's
I
not record, it's vinyl. Holly picked up Prince, the Hits, number 2. And I asked her, what about number 1? She said, I only like the songs on number 2. And you got a ceiling falling down. You don't want to blow a lot of money, although there was a lot of money to be blown. So I picked up a couple cheap things. I found a new copy of Monty Python's Contractual Obligations album.
That's a fun one.
Which I know I have in record, and I may actually have in CD form, but I don't know. And then for $1.99, I picked up Victor Borg's Live, which... If you're not familiar with Victor Borg, he was a comedic, pianist.
Yes.
And his stuff on Channel 2 is just hilarious, and I hope the CD shows that as much fun. So Electric Fetus was fun. Comic-wise, well, I've been slowly reading through graphic novels, as I said, because sometimes at work there's just some downtime, sometimes there isn't, but I was able to get through quite a few books. Another Star Trek New Visions book of Women Born. This is the photoplay John Byrne series where he takes pictures of the old Star Trek guys and makes new episodes on it. It's just kind of fun. I picked up a book at Hot Comics a couple weeks ago for 75% off called Kong, King of Skull Island. This is kind of like a sequel because it talks about in 1933, Carl Denham returned from a mysterious hidden island with a priceless treasure. Treasure not of gold or jewels, but of the island's barbaric god, hence the King Kong movie. And
now, is this the one published by Dark Horse or Fantagraphics?
Marcosia.
Marcosia. Okay.
Yeah. And so...
Yeah, sometime I'll tell you the story behind that company, Joe.
Well, the book read well.
That's a dark story.
The book read well. 25 years later, Carl's son makes a shocking discovery that leads him back to the site of his father's greatest adventures. Now, Dark Horse had a version of this, too, where they went back to Kong Island, which confused me because I wasn't quite sure if this was the Dark Horse version, but when I looked inside, it's a different storyline because Dark Horse had one where I think it's a prose book.
Yes.
And they go back and they discover, yes, it was the last Kong, and they deal more with how they build the wall and things like this. This could actually fit all together with it. So Another book I picked up, speaking of Dark Horse, I had picked this up a while back at Half Price Books for a mere $7. The Fifth Beatle, The Brian Epstein Story by Vivek Tilwary, Andrew C. Robinson, with Kyle Baker. And I got me an autograph copy. And as I read through this, first of all, I'm a big Beatle fan. So, and I realized I don't really know a lot about Brian other than the whole story that, hey, he saw the Beatles in a club and he risked it all and signed them or whatever. But as you're reading through the book, what's interesting is that Vivek researched everything, and everything in the book is true, allegedly. And there are some pretty funky stories in here, like when he goes to try to get the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, that Ed Sullivan insisted that he talk to a dummy. And
talk to a dummy?
Yep.
So Lamont from Sanford and Son, he talked to Lamont? You big dummy!
Pretty close.
Okay.
But basically, the dummy kept telling him that he viewed the Beatles as a novelty act, and he said that we couldn't headline them, and Brian Epstein said, no, they're headlining. And I said, I'll tell you what, if you won't have us headline a single show, tell Mr. Sullivan we'll agree to headline three shows instead for half of what you'd pay us for one performance. And there's a couple other funky stories in here. The big thing is other than a study of Brian Epstein as a business guy, there's really not a lot out there about him. So he did the talk to people who knew him, talk to family members. So again, take it. Is it true? Is it not? But it definitely, if you're a Beatle fan, go find yourself a copy of this. It's available in soft cover as well, so you should be able to order it. Another one that I picked up, and this is one of those I must have enjoyed the preview. It's called Pop Gun War Gift. It's by Farrell Darempel? Sorry, Farrell, if I slaughtered your name. The gist of the story is that a kid finds a set of angel wings, or at least he thinks they're angel wings, and he discovers he can fly. But this is such a surreal story going through the people in the neighborhood that he lives in. And I don't know how to describe it other than go find yourself a copy of this Pop Gun War Gift. And give it a try, because this is really, I mean, it was an incredible journey just reading through this thing. Very compelling, and I don't like to give away too much of what's going on, but it was fun. I enjoyed it, and I don't know if there's going to be more of it, but I definitely would revisit. Corey, I need you to say something. You finally read it?
Okay.
Ready? I pulled out my absolute all-star Superman and read it.
You finally read it?
Yes. I have no freaking clue how long I had this thing. I know Holly and...
You have had it for at least 3 years.
And I just read it. And I never...
And?
Oh.
The best Superman story ever.
Fantastic. This is one...
Do you have it right there, Joe?
I do.
Okay. Could you open to the very first page?
The very first page.
Now...
It's blank.
Jen?
Oh, wait, you're talking the comic page. Okay, hang on.
Yes. Jen?
Huh?
How much do you know about Superman?
He wears blue and his underpants are red and outside of his pants.
Okay, how would you like to know everything you need to know about Superman in 8 words?
His underpants are outside his pants?
Nope. Joe, please read the first page of All-Star Superman.
Doomed Planet. Desperate scientist, last hope, kindly couple.
Everything you need to know. That's Superman's origin on one page with 8 words.
Now, there is a small freaking in this.
Batman's is just dead parents.
Dead parents. Who's Martha? How are not Martha?
Sorry, for Batman, you're also forgetting somebody threw a bat through the window.
I'm the goddamn Batman!
What are you, retarded? I'm the goddamn Batman!
Stop shouting in the microphone.
I read the opening prologue that...
And it spoiled it,
did. Which I thought utterly sucked. Because, you know, And I'm not going to spoil it here, but I am going to say, Jen, when you are ready, I will borrow you my $100 All-Star Superman copy to read. And I'd be real curious to see what you think of what Corey and I view as probably one of the quintessential Superman stories.
Okay, and I will read this at some point.
Whiteley's beautiful fucking art.
Yes, you will.
Oh, my God.
Got fucking in it?
No. Oh. The art. It's one of those absolutes that you, if they ever put out an artist edition, I will sell a kidney. I want the artist edition. Although I doubt they ever will, because DC doesn't do a lot of that. But oh, Quietly's art is amazing in that.
Rat bastard kidney. No, there are three of them on Idney. Rat bitten kidneys. Oh,
Idney?
There we go. Yeah.
Idney. That's eBay's competition.
Yep. For illegal body parts. So, nope, nothing there. So that's pretty much what I've been geeking on. Oh, I'm sorry. Jen, what are you geeking on?
I can't even remember. Joe went on for so long.
I know. Ain't it great?
I had a bunch. I wrote some notes, and it's been so long that now they're just random words on the paper. I can't remember what they...
Well, let's read the words.
No, okay, I'm going to go...
It's like found.
It is really fucking beautiful here. Like, I mean, there's grass and trees and shit in Texas, but springtime here, and especially since it's gone into summer, like, I have a commute, and I've been meeting lots of new people, and so driving around lots of areas that I haven't been to before, you know, in the general area, and I go down a lot of highways where it's just like, you know, it's like a four-lane highway. It's not a giant, you know, interstate freeway or six lanes of concrete, but there's just the trees, the color of the trees, the people plant flowers here. It's not just, you know, oh, look, it's some impatience or, you know, whatever the it thing is for the spring in the suburbs down there. Like, there's fucking tulips. I don't know if I've ever seen tulips anywhere but the grocery store before. And was a few weeks ago, there was fucking tulips everywhere. And I'm like constantly in a threat of driving off the road because I can't go for like half of a block without going, ooh, that's nice, or look at that. I've never seen that kind of flower in anything but a picture. So, I mean, it's just, you know, I didn't move here because of that, but I just really fucking love it here. Like, I'm just constantly like seeing new things or finding new reasons why I'm like, so happy to be here. And pretty soon here I'm gonna hit the road in my new car, so I'm gonna be seeing a little more of Iowa soon, a little more of Wisconsin, because we're so close to Wisconsin too. And you know, my coworkers, my friends, everybody's constantly recommending, you gotta go here. But I just constantly, every day I go outside, I'm just struck by like how pretty everything is here. The older houses, the new houses, people really get into their gardens. It's just amazing. So that's been great. And then I was out at the source on Saturday, like I mentioned already. I was there for a couple hours. I was talking to, Mark, and a guy named Bud Hansel was there, who, is apparently going to be my new range buddy, cause I don't really have a lot of people up here to shoot with. And, you know, I'm still kind of, I'm kind of out of practice. So there's that. And I was really happy just hanging out a couple hours at the source. You know, I looked around some, and you talk about a lot of great stuff. I looked around and I'm like, well, I already have all this stuff to read that I haven't had time to read, but I want to buy something, you know, something small, cause I can't spend a lot. So I bought a book called Minimum Wage, which I haven't had time to read yet, that looked good. But I mean, I'm just walking around looking at stuff and I can't decide what I want to buy. You know, I'm looking at the books. I'm not looking at, you know, the monthly issues, but there's just so much stuff out there. And I stood next to Mark's table talking with them, and I just watched so many different kinds of people. I mean, it's so different back from, you know, when I was fresh out of high school, 1920s and early 2000s, late 90s, hanging out in comic shops. It was what you typically associate with comic shops. You know, it's maybe a couple of women there, guys, girlfriends or wives mostly. And then, you know, a lot of guys that fit, you know, your general kind of selection of stereotypes. You know, you've got
the guys
with the neck beards, or the really super skinny guys with kind of greasy hair. And I don't want to get anybody hate mail, but there's, you know, if you hang around in these places long enough, there's a few types that you see over and over. And that's hanging out the source on a Saturday, a busy Saturday. There was people gaming in the back of the store. Us up front, we're watching right by the check stand, and I saw little girls coming in buying big stacks of comic books, little boys, you know, groups of women together, just absolutely so different from my experience, you know, back, you know, years ago when I used to hang out in comic shops. And it's really great to see, like, the variety of stuff that's out there now. You know, I didn't walk in the source. I would walk in the comic shops in the past, you know, and most of the decoration on the wall was, you know, just whatever, pinups. You know, Joe mentioned ElfQuest earlier. There was always, you know, some kind of, you know, pinup kind of softcore looking artwork of a lot of the comic characters, you know, characters like Lady Death, I remember, as being particularly, you know, naked.
Booptastic,
yeah, and they did have a little bit of that stuff, but not a lot. There wasn't much of it, and it's just really great to see, you know, the variety of people and the variety of stuff available for everyone. There's really something for everybody out there now. So, I was pretty hardcore geeking on that. What are you geeking on, Corey?
I had an incredibly busy week. And but I was able to work in some fun stuff. One thing was that I went to see Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor is my favorite American-based wrestling promotion. They put on a show at Hopkins, which will be part of their TV show in a few weeks. But what really struck me was how much humor was involved. In the opening match, it was what they call a dark match. It's a match that isn't going to be on TV. One of the wrestlers there is a guy I know from Facebook who's out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And his gimmick is that he wears Zubas and a fanny pack. And he's very retro. He's retro 80s. And he spent a lot of time joking with the crowd. He would, you know, do a move and then turn to the crowd and make a joke about the move or ask how he was doing. Or I like that sort of thing. Then the matches themselves, there were some comedy matches. There was some mat-based stuff. There was some high-flying stuff. There were the goddamn Young Bucks who piss me off every time they wrestle. Those of you who watch wrestling, I know the Young Bucks are popular. I know that they do all the high-flying. But here's my problem with the Young Bucks. Joe? Did I lose Joe? I lost Joe. And Jin's not paying any attention.
I still see Joe.
Hold on while we try to get the call back. Anyway, they do a move called a super kick. Now, when Shawn Michaels did a super kick, that was a finishing move. He'd hit you with the super kick, you were out, it was done. I counted in this match, they hit guys with over 30 super kicks. And there are a lot of people who are like, oh, wow, they did 30 super kicks. To me, it's like, oh, you hit these guys with 30 super kicks. That means your super kick doesn't hurt. But the rest of the matches were a lot of fun. They only went 3 hours, Jen. Not like last time when they went 4.5. Is Joe there? Is Jen there? Is anybody there? Hello?
You're all alone.
Somebody's there.
Somebody's there.
Yeah.
The podcasters are listening. That's all that matters.
All right. And the comic thing that I'm geeking on is the Omnibus for Gotham Central. I have always thought that there is a brilliant idea in doing stories about the cops in Gotham City. Gotham Central, well, there was a couple of miniseries back in the early 90s called Gotham Knights, which was about Commissioner Gordon and some others. And not only did I like that series so much that when I first got online on Genie, we actually would write short stories about cops in Gotham City. Yeah, fan fiction. But hey, it was fun. Back in the early 2000s, Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka wrote, and Michael Lark drew a series called Gotham Central, which was about the cops in Gotham City. I bought every issue of it. Now I have the omnibus. I have been reading it, and it's better than I remember. When they put this out as trade paperbacks again, I highly, highly recommend it. And then the last thing I'm going to say that I'm geeking on, Jen and I went to the Hi-Lo Diner.
We did.
Which is not only a classic dining car.
It is a bar.
It is a full-functioning bar and diner. Jen had a donut with meat.
It was amazing.
And I had the best French toast I have had in a good 5 years.
I kind of want that now.
It was... Because, you know, Jen's a diner rat.
I am.
So we've been going to the diners. But for me, my problem with a lot of diners is it's all the same thing. This, they got a little innovative. It's the French toast had some different flavors. It was one of the things I like about a really good French toast is it should almost taste like a custard. The interior of the bread should be hard and crusty, and the interior should be like a custard, and they had it right. And the syrup was a bourbon maple, which I just wanted a glass of that stuff so that I could drink it. It was amazing. It was amazing. So I don't bring forth my foodiness on the show that much, but I was highly impressed by the Hi-Lo Diner, and we'll probably be going there more often than not. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for over an hour and a half.
Woo!
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least is we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
He said there are only 2 days in the year that nothing can be done. One is called yesterday, and the other is called tomorrow. So today is the right day to love, believe, do, and mostly live. The Dalai Lama.
That's Jim? Hit my music, boys. We're going to dance. We're going to dance. We're going to dance and have some fun.
Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.